are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and this is Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews with a local perspective, and I'm your host, Chris Wilson. You can listen to this show on Wednesdays, 5 o'clock after calendar, or on Sunday at 12:30. You can also go online and listen to the podcast whenever you want to listen to a spoken word interview. So today I'm pretty excited because we have the wonderful Anna Quinn, and she is known around town as the proprietress of Writer's Workshop and the Imprint Bookstore. Mm-hmm. She's also very well known for her classes that she has at the bookstore and all the wonderful people that she brings to town. And now she is not only a poet and a teacher, but she is publishing her very first novel this year in 2018. I'm so excited for 2018, aren't you, Anna?
I am. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome. I want to talk a little bit about your book. It's called The Night Child, and it has a wonderfully evocative and mysterious cover. It's very beautiful.
Thank you.
I put off reading the book because I knew that it was something that I wanted to have kind of be part of me when I talked to you. But then when I started it, I didn't want to stop reading. But then I had to stop reading. I had to stop reading to think about it as I went along, because I so empathized with different characters in the book. I wanted to remember being a teacher myself, because you have some wonderful scenes about teaching. Being a daughter and what that father-daughter relationship is all about, especially when you're the firstborn, as I was. Mm-hmm. And then a wife, a mother, a friend to people who may be in crisis. There were so many opportunities to reflect and feel very emotional during the course of reading this book.
Thank you for reading it so carefully.
It's very authentic. And it's also very personal. I want to tell our audience that, you know, here's Anna. She's lived other places, but right now she's very much a part of our community. And she received reviews, pre-publication reviews from the American Library Association, a wonderful review from Kirkus Publishers. Is that right?
I haven't heard from Kirkus yet.
Okay,
yes,
so what
it's
was
Forward Review, the American Library Association, the Library Journal, and Garth Stein was favorite of mine.
I did want to mention Garth Stein.
And,
yes, yeah. Garth Stein, who says, you must read this book. You must read this book. And we'll get into why as we continue to talk. First of all, I'd like to, without revealing too much about the book, tell us a little bit about the origins of this story. How did you come to write it?
It was really born from my memoir. And originally, I started working on my memoir decades ago. And I wrote it for myself. I didn't have any intention of publishing a memoir. I was processing my own personal history with dissociation and sexual abuse. I was working through it with a psychotherapist at the time. And then when I felt like I'd come to a place where it felt I was done with the memoir, I still felt like I hadn't uncovered something. There was some truth or some conceptual knowledge that I'd missed. I just didn't feel very satisfied. So I started exploring those themes of dissociation and betrayal and power through poetry. And that's when I really started to get involved with Gary Lilly's poetry workshops. And they helped me so much bring up more fragments and imagery that identified, brought more depth to those themes. And I wrote essays, and still it didn't feel right. And then it was just maybe a year after I'd been exploring with poetry and essay, I started having these images of a woman, a very young woman who was a teacher doing various things in her life. And then an image of a child and another small child, and just image after image after image started coming to me. And I began recording the images and watching them. We were all on the stage. I was sitting in the middle of the stage watching them, and they were telling me a story. Oh. And that's when I realized the memoir really wanted to be a novel.
Yeah. Yes. So it has been a long time percolating, and the images, you can tell that there's poetry in your language as you're reading this book. Let's talk about these very likable characters and how they came to life on these pages. A little bit more about each one, because that's one of the things I felt so engaging about this story. Because sometimes when you read a difficult story like this, you're not really liking the people and you don't want to hear about them. The opposite was true for me. I wanted to know more. I wanted to see what was going to happen. I really liked these people.
Thank you. Not everybody does. but I really appreciate that. Yeah. I don't write intentionally to make anyone likable or unlikable. I kind of write them as they come. And I'm most drawn to characters in literature who are complex and vulnerable and feel like real people to me.
So let's start with Nora.
Okay. She came to me very introverted, obviously holding and carrying some sadness and insecurities. So I kind of worked through and wrote those. And so she was very real to me. She's probably, though all the characters in this book are composites of people I've met in my life, you know, expanded by my imagination, she is probably most like me, but she is also other women that I have met along the way.
So, and then she's married.
She's married to Paul.
Yes.
I tried to be very generous with Paul.
I think you succeeded, because even though there's a lot of misunderstandings between Nora and Paul, I think you helped to explain maybe why.
I think it's one of the most difficult situations for a marriage to go through when one of the partners is experiencing a psychological shakeup. And especially since Nora didn't know what was happening to her, and made her kind of withdraw more or else act out angrily. And so she was confused. Paul was at a place in his career where he was really wanting to do well. And I think some of his reactions to Nora, though they may have seemed cold, maybe, his own fears that he wasn't quite sure what to do.
And then there is the principal at her school, John. And the way she talks to Paul is completely different than the way she talks to John.
John is a character who listens very intentionally. And I wanted to explore that. I wanted to see what it would be like to go through what Nora had gone through and have somebody really listen to her and see if that changed her without controlling the trajectory of the arc at all. I just wanted to see, well, what will happen when someone really listens to her? And that came in the character of John, because it didn't come in the character of Paul.
And there's also her daughter,
Fiona.
Yeah, you know, she's just light and life and innocence and love.
And that's what she carries.
And so it's wonderful to see the scenes between her and her mother, and how she just helps her mother, who's going through a period of psychological destruction. Maybe we better talk about that, because you mentioned dissociation and the splitting apart, the buried secrets. Without revealing a lot about the story, maybe you can tell us how this came to life and how you made this sound so real, even though it starts out very fantastical.
Yeah, I know some people thought it was going to be a magic realism story or supernatural.
I'm one of those. I'm one of those.
Yeah. The dissociation, and I probably won't say where Nora is on that continuum, because that's kind of an exploration in the book. Basically, it's a distancing from reality. So if you have a continuum of dissociation at one end, you have daydreaming, you know, when we all do that. And then at the other end, it's really complex. You may leave reality for an extended length of time. You may not know where you are, who you are, and that's when consciousness can often split and go into different identities. So it was probably the hardest thing for me to write, was watching Nora try to mother the beautiful little Fiona while she was going through all of this, because she couldn't quite be the mother she wanted to be to this ray of light of her daughter. So it was important for me to show that, because it's not an unusual situation in the world.
You know, you read about books that says in the preface or that it's about buried secrets, but usually somebody knows the secret, right? And it's revealed.
Right.
But in this book,
You don't know.
Nobody knows.
Yeah, nobody knows.
And so, you know, just layer by layer, mm-hmm. you unpeel this process of discovery. Mm-hmm. I must say that when I was halfway through the book, I thought, okay, we kind of know something here, and that seems like the climax, but I'm only halfway through the book. What's going to happen now? And then, dear listeners, this book proceeds to progress at such an incredible pace that you cannot put it down. Mm. And so when your publishers are reading this book, wasn't there some discussion about what genre to place this in? So tell us that
story.
There
was a lot of discussion. There was a lot of discussion, and I'm not sure. Initially, we weren't very successful because both my agent and the publisher had kind of moved it towards suspense, thriller. And when I discovered that, I was really stunned because that was not my intention at all. But I wanted to hear why they thought that, you know. And I think because they felt it was a page-turner, there was a mystery. But that's not, you know, when I think of thriller, that's not how I associate it. When I look at customers that choose thrillers in the store, there are certain things that components are looking for, but that isn't how I wrote it. And some of the reviewers on Goodreads, for example, would put it in suspense. But then more and more and more people on Goodreads and on NetGalley, people that review it, started putting it over in literary fiction and general fiction. Some people put it in women's fiction, but that's not a category I mm-hmm. really groove on. So then it seemed to find its home and the readers that were more drawn to it. But it was interesting. And I think we talked about this once.
Psychological fiction.
Yeah, psychological fiction is probably the place it most belongs. Mm-hmm. And I think that is how they're labeling it now. But the whole coming up with genre is a blur anyway. I feel like right now for writers, we're blurring so many boundaries. And I think that's a really positive thing.
It's not all about the psychological destruction mm-hmm. of a woman's mind or what's happening to her character. There's also some scenes where she is in the classroom, mm-hmm. and I've been there, and so I loved reading those because, especially middle school or high school, painted those kind of late 90s, that where the mm-hmm. the book is set in Seattle mm-hmm. in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And so there, you kind of had these conversations mm-hmm. with the students. And I went, oh, there's Anna, you know, telling us about her favorite books. So how did these scenes, and also revealing a lot about the character along the way. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. Let's talk about that.
Well, again, and I don't want this to sound too woo-woo, but when I was recording Nora's movements throughout this story and I saw that she selected these books, it was fascinating to me. And obviously they're books that I love too. When she chose to teach high school students To the Lighthouse by Virginia Woolf, I thought that was a fantastic choice because, especially for high school students, because it's about gender dynamics. But also it's about the compressed sense of time, which is what happens in The Night Child. I mean, it takes place between Thanksgiving and Valentine's Day. It's a really tightly pressed sense of time. And we always have this clock, you know, that's ticking. And it really represents how our minds do not tick linearly. Mm-hmm. They are all over in fragments. So very much like Virginia Woolf writes, you know, in the stream of consciousness, she's constantly trying to give shape to the story. So I loved that. The other one, The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, is a really important book to me. Again, it was another one about perception, which To the Lighthouse also is, because we're seeing through the character's eyes. But in The Bluest Eye, we have this child who wants to be white and have blue eyes, and she's black. And it's a phenomenal book for high school students to read because I think it really helps understand that perspective of
and
who we
all
are.
Of them want to be somebody
and everybody
different.
Wants to be someone different.
Straight yeah. hair, curly hair, and taller, yeah. thinner.
And what's the definition of beauty?
That's
really
right.
Yeah. So, and there's power structures in The Bluest Eye too. And then The Tempest, which is a book that I taught so often.
William Shakespeare's The Tempest.
Right. That I really was tired of. I was not that happy about that choice. But I still see it fits The Night Child so well because, again, it's about different power structures, and there's a teacher in the book that presents a different perspective of The Tempest mm-hmm. that shocks Nora and triggers her. So it shocked me. That was an important, those are important scenes to me. And they bring out all the kids too, and that I love. And
We're talking to Anna Quinn. We're talking about her new book, The Night Child. You're listening to the Book Lovers Cafe. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. And this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Fort Townsend. Anna, you mentioned triggers and the story being set between Thanksgiving and Valentine's Day. Talk about Nora's triggers in the book and what happened as you were writing it.
The first image that came to me about this book was a little girl coming out in dressed for Thanksgiving, Fiona.
Mm-hmm.
And she purposely planned this outfit for Thanksgiving. She had red tennis shoes with orange laces, an orange shirt, and a turkey on the shirt. You know, she was very ready for Thanksgiving. And then there was the image of Fiona and Paul and Nora going down into the restaurant. It takes place at Claylock Lodge. It was a way for them to not pretend they're with a large family, but they're really alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a very difficult time for Nora to not have family that she can be with. And so they are creating this illusional family. So, you know, the holidays, of course, magnify all of that. It magnifies who aren't in our lives anymore, who we lost, who we never had. Meanwhile, all this holiday cheer is going around all of us. And there are so many people that feel excruciating loneliness at this time of year. And, you know, Nora was one of them for sure.
Mm-hmm. I was reading this between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
You were, yeah.
So, yes. So this time is a powerful time and it sets off emotions for people. And we think about family. I wanted to share some of the great language that is in this story as well. It's a fast-paced story, but there's also some beautiful emotional imagery. And so I'm going to ask Anna to read a little bit about an old man, maybe a couple of old men, and her relationship with Ireland.
Okay, well, this part, I'm going to begin with the time when Nora was in a state of panic, and all she wanted to do was run. And she's in Seattle. She's on the Seattle waterfront. The clank and bang of the ferry terminals and the waves slamming against pilings and gulls squawking so tortuously loud, she covers her ears in the streets already crowded with tourists, all of them staring at her, pity plastered across their faces. And she runs faster until she sees up ahead the old man who squats near the Starbucks doorway each day, the one with the opaque eyes who strums quiet on his guitar, a bottle of vodka lying at his side like a dazed girlfriend. When Nora is near him, she stops and leans against the brick wall, slides her hands from her ears, and allows the music to absorb her. The mauve notes and delicate arcs and spirals soften and ease her mind, and slowly she becomes more herself. The music hypnotic, carrying her back to her grandfather. Sundays, her grandfather played his accordion on the sidewalk in front of Patty McMack's bar, a hand-rolled smoke dangling from his mouth, the limestone waters of Loch Miasca in the background. La Castagnari, he'd say in an Italian accent, to tourists asking about the accordion. And he would show them how with a single button he made one note on the draw and another on the pull. And she would sit on the bench, watching, his hands yellowed and weathered from years of tilling and pulling and coaxing impotent Irish dirt to render, to yield something into his hands. His fingers skittering over buttons, notes flying fast over the lock, the bog, the way he compressed and expanded the bellows, allowing its breath, its vibrations, made sounds inside her body. Sometimes he'd lay the accordion on her lap, his huge hands guiding her small ones through leather straps, pressing her fingers on the buttons. "What do you feel?" he'd ask, and she'd shrug she didn't know. "Do you feel green like tangled ivy, or yellow as the hawthorn blossom, or black like the raven?" he'd ask, and wink at her and make her laugh. And when she'd tell him her color, he'd show her the buttons that created the color, and she'd play feelings she couldn't even imagine.
I love the way that you put music with the feelings. Where did this story come from? Where did this image come from?
My mother was born in Ireland, and I spent quite a bit of time there, and I still do. And I was very close to my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And though it was my grandmother who played the accordion, but he would fiddle around on it. He was instrumental in my life. He was a positive force, and he was the one who taught me to be brave. mm-hmm. and that I was braver than I thought.
So in this book, the memories of Ireland, the memories of the grandfather are, you know, a respite, a place to go to when mm-hmm. when Nora is, you know, at her wit's end, when she's on the run. So
right. That, and it sets the scene, too, for Nora's mother, mm-hmm. Maeve, who came from, you know, she was born in Ireland. And so her struggles in this book reflect her childhood and where, you know, the struggles that she, challenges she had. And that causes her to deal with Nora in a way we might not expect. That was another challenge for Nora.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So here we are. We're at that time of year. A new year is upon us. In the world of hashtag me too, we're also in a time of pervasive sexual harassment or knowledge about it and knowledge about sexual abuse. And here is your book. It's being released now. I want your reaction to that and your hopes for your readers.
I have to say that neither the publisher nor myself had any sense that the book would land during this time, because as you know, the publishing process is long, and when I submitted it, it's been almost 2 years to, you know, get through submission, finding an agent, get it through submission, have it edited, all the pre-publishing activities that have to happen. But when Blackstone accepted this book, they had no idea, you know, that this would happen. And prior to that, though I had a few requests for the full manuscript, some were rejected because publishers felt we've done that. We've already talked about this.
Nobody's interested in this. No longer relevant.
And I was crushed, really. And mm-hmm. I thought, okay, well, we have barely begun to touch this subject. And I was so grateful when Blackstone took it. And then to have this happen, I'm grateful for the book, but I'm also just really grateful for our culture that so many women are speaking up now and are feeling stronger about and safer to voice their experiences. And it's a huge turning point and a point of enlightenment. And we have to keep at it.
It has been, the past year, a year of somewhat despairing and depressing news, mm-hmm. yet it's also been the rise of activism, mm-hmm. the rise of becoming woke. I'd like to know what's next for you, Anna Quinn. What are you thinking about in terms of 2018?
I will continue to be politically active mm-hmm. until things change.
Yes.
I will continue to write more than ever. I feel like writing is a tremendous form of activism. And my next novel, though it's very different than The Night Child, still carries the themes of identity and feminism is very strong in the next novel. That's all I can really say about it, but it's fun and I'm really enjoying working on it. And it takes place in the San Juan Islands.
Oh, that's great. So I did want to say something about the setting in Seattle. For some reason, it's snowing and it seems much colder there in your book than it normally is. Why did you make it icy and snowy?
Well, in 1996, I researched it.
Okay.
Well, no, there have been years in Seattle mm-hmm. where it has snowed and been cold. But actually, setting is really another character to me. And that time of year fit well, setting being time and place. To have it be that gray time in Seattle where the weather was really this dark force that pulled on Nora too mm-hmm. and impacted and shaped how she was feeling. That's one of the reasons I felt like that worked really well. And, you know, it is that time of the year. And the ocean is another part of the setting that's a character because the ocean to Nora is what calms her. And it also represents new life and change and just carries so much as a character, but the ocean is more of a positive character, whereas the weather is a darker mm-hmm. force.
Well, there is some place that we can go to get away from the cold winds that blow down Water Street. I can't let you go, Anna, without talking about your bookshop, Writer's Workshop. It's been a literary anchor for us on the peninsula. And can you give us some highlights of the past year or something you can tell us about coming up in 2018?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a great year. I mean, we're always, we're so grateful for the instructors that we have, you know, all along the way to have the magic of Dorothy Allison and Kim Stafford, and this year Natalie Goldberg. But the real magic, their magic, don't get that wrong. The real magic are the customers that come in and the conversations that we have in the store and how much community is built amongst books, you know, with all different ages, especially the children and the young adults. And just to have everybody in there of all ages talking about books is really, truly magic. Coming up, you can go online at writersworkshop.com to read all the workshops, but there's 6 different poetry workshops this time. There's 3 memoir, there's flash fiction, David Hicks, there's 2 different novels classes. David Hicks is coming back to teach one, and Laura Schneider, she I think you might know her. I see that we just got her proposal. She works, Laura Jean Schneider, she works at the Rose Theater. She's going to do a class on using setting in your novels and how setting can be like a character. So that'll be really interesting.
Okay, lots of interesting workshops and happenings at the Writer's Workshop. Join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson, and you can listen to past shows and other programs on the podcast page. I will put a link, Anna's link, on the podcast page by the description of this show. Thank you, Mike Schlechter in the booth, and he'll be editing the show. Thanks to all our volunteers, and happy reading this winter.
Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
You see the smile that's on my mouth. It's hiding the words, it don't come out.